Hello, everyone. This is The Stark Truth with Robert Stark. My guest is Andy Nowicki. So you have a new book out. It's called Heart Killer.
Correct.
And what is the? It's not published under Countercurrents, but it's under a different site.
Yes. First of all, thanks for having me on your show. I do appreciate it. My new book, which is entitled Heart Killer, is published by ER Books. That's the letter E, the letter R, books.com. That's where you can find it. You can also find it on Amazon. And it's exclusively an e-book. Hopefully, you know, sometime in the future, if I have my druthers, it'll come out as an honest-to-God traditional book with binding and pages and all that. But for now, it's something that you can buy for Kindle or other electronic methods of reading. And, like I said, published by ER Books, which is a not only Countercurrents, but it's a non-alternative right. It's not affiliated with what could be called the alternative right ghetto, which is part of what makes it exciting for me. It's, you know, because as a writer, of course, you want to reach as wide an audience as possible.
Is this the first time you've published a book or done work with a site that's outside the alternative right?
Yes. Well, broadly speaking, of course, I write and I'm a contributing editor for AlternativeRight.com. But when I say alternative right, I mean broadly speaking, the alt-right, you know, this community, I guess, that we commonly refer to as the alternative right, composed of readers of Countercurrents and Alternative Right and Talkie Mag and other places like that. My previous two books were published by Countercurrents. Some of the listeners probably know Under the Nile and The Columbine Pilgrim. And my first book, Considering Suicide, was published by Nine Bandit Books, which is lesser known but still definitely worth checking out publisher. And I also have a collection of stories, The Doctor and the Heretic and other stories by Black Oak. But all of my previous publishers are people who are put out by publishers who are generally in sympathy with our alternative right views, our distrust and dislike of the zeitgeist and our opposition to political correctness and to various smelly little orthodoxies of our times. Whereas the new book that I've released, this new book, Heart Killer, is from a more mainstream site, really.
So what does ER stand for?
ER stands for Erotic Review, and that's something I'm going to get to in a minute. This is a sort of a classy erotica site, you could say, and it's one of the more famous ones renowned in many ways in England. Let's see, what can I say about it? I got to know ER Books through Colin Liddell, who writes for Alternative Right. Is an associate editor or has some kind of affiliation with them or did at some point, but managed to get on their to become someone who was on their radar screen through Colin, and it's worked out very well. And of course, this is I describe Heart Killer as an erotic thriller, an erotic time tripping crime thriller is my. The way I'm selling it, more or less, the brand that I'm giving it, but it is very thematically related to much of my prior work, including probably most especially the Columbine Pilgrim. A lot of the same themes are covered therein.
So you seem to have a specific sort of interest in the theme, getting revenge at suffering from the adolescence.
Yes, I would say so. I think that's a correct observation to make. That's something that crops up a lot in a lot of my work, And, of course, that was a definite theme in the Columbine Pilgrim, in which a certain brilliant but rather deranged young man visits Columbine in Colorado, Columbine High School, the site of the Columbine Massacre, and has all kinds of weird, surreal experiences there, and eventually undertakes a Columbine-like massacre of his own. That's, again, a theme that really did come into play in that story. And in Heartkiller, my new book, there is a similar character who plots revenge, but in a very different kind of way. And in this case, since this is an erotic thriller, this is a hero who, in the words of Pat Benatar from that famous song from the 1980s, uses sex as a weapon to get revenge.
So do you identify with characters personally in both the books?
Yes, in some ways, I would have to admit that I do, and I hope that your listeners don't read too much into that and think that I'm a madman or that I'm, you know, just inches away from carrying out a massacre or doing some terrible thing like that. But I would say that the adolescence was a difficult time for me, as it is for many. And, you know, there is a certain, as I've expressed before, there is a certain sense in which during adolescence, all of the cruelties that are latent in humanity are really become manifest. In a way, it's a wonder that incidents like Columbine don't happen more often, because you're never more vulnerable when you're a teenager, and people are never crueler than when you're a teenager. You know, it's a time in which you want to try to belong, you want to try to fit in, you want to be popular, so for some reason that suddenly becomes, you know, the be-all, end-all. And if you're not, then you're shunned, you're mocked, you're reviled, and so forth. And it can be a very scarring thing if you're not popular. I guess if you are, then it can be a great thing. But yeah, it's been a definite issue. Let's just say it's something that, in one way or another, I have dealt with. And of course, I'm almost 42 years old right now, so you'd think I'd be over it by now.
So you've never gotten revenge personally?
No, I haven't. And I should also emphasize that while my adolescence was rough, it was nowhere near what Tony Meander, the character in Columbine Pilgrim, experienced. I exaggerate certain things. And probably nothing at all like the character in my new story, Heartkiller, also experienced. You know, just things have a tendency to get amplified when you're that age, and you remember certain things. You probably have a selective memory. You remember certain things, certain times when you were slighted or treated badly or picked on. Those tend to stay with you maybe more than, you know, certain other memories that are more mundane. So no, I have not. I have not gotten revenge, except maybe, you know, success is the best revenge. And that's what I've striven for, whatever desire I've had for revenge, I've sort of sublimated, I guess, and put into, you know, my work. And hopefully it's worked out for me.
So you got the idea of this novel from a project you did with your students, and you asked your students to write about an example where they wanted revenge against someone who wronged them and what they did. And it's sort of based, the character is based on a story that one of your students told you.
Yes, and this is something that I go into a little bit on one of my YouTube promos. I talk about this, but which your listeners can find by just going to YouTube and typing in Heartkiller, two words, Heartkiller. But yeah, it was an extraordinary thing. I teach English at the college level, and one of the stories that we read is The Cask of Amontillado, which is a story by Edgar Allan Poe, which, like a lot of Poe's stories, is rather violent and bloody and disturbing. And in it, one character has vowed revenge against someone else who he feels has wronged him, and he gets it in a particularly gruesome and terrible way. And so after we read the story, I sometimes like to get my students to reflect on, you know, the themes in the literature that we read, what these stories could be said to be about. Since this is a story about revenge, I ask them, think about a time in your life when, you know, you at least were tempted to get revenge for something that you felt, a wrong that you felt you had received by at the hands of somebody else, a time in which you felt you were slighted in some way. You know, so whether you believe in it or not, whether revenge is something that you, again, let yourself indulge in or not, maybe there was a time when, there had to have been a time when you wanted it. And if so, did you set out to get it, and how do you feel about it now in retrospect? So I got a lot of interesting answers. I always do, and I'm always interested in, you know, what my students have to tell me about their lives, you know, their experiences, and so forth. But by far the most interesting answer I got was from one student, a male student, who said that try to make this long story short, I'm kind of meandering here, but he was deployed. I teach at a place that's near an Army base, so I have a lot of Army personnel and families of Army personnel. So he was deployed and sent to Iraq, and while he was there, his wife, who had married straight out of high school, was his childhood sweetheart and everything, while he was there, his wife cheated on him and divorced him. And, of course, he felt extremely betrayed and angry and upset about this. And, you know, everything that he'd believed in came crashing down on him. So what he decided to do after this, in some existential way to get revenge on life, not specifically at his wife, but at everyone who he felt had wronged him in some sense, was he decided to frequent bars and find women who were married but whose husbands were deployed or for some reason, you know, weren't there with them, to find these women and seduce them. And again, the student, you know, he was not what you would picture as the Don Juan type.
So the student is more, you wouldn't compare him to the character in the book either.
Well, he had certain things in common. This is the kernel of the story I modeled my character after. Anyway, but what he did was he would seduce these women, these married women, sleep with them, and then later on find a way to inform their husbands that their wives had cheated on them with him. And so somehow he got some kind of satisfaction out of this. And again, it floored me. It was just flabbergasting. And it started, you know, my mind started percolating with ideas and eventually led to the creation of this story, in which a character, again, uses sex as a weapon. This formerly put upon nerdy geek, who was laughed at and rejected by everyone, in his adulthood becomes this vengeful seducer. And that, I guess that was the kernel, the beginning of the genesis, what led to my writing this story, this novel, Heart Killer.
I remember when I interviewed you last time, you had that article called In Defense of Squares. It was actually about,
yes.
The topic was sort of about pickup artists and that article by Bartomeu,
yes,
that was critical of you. And that's sort of what this book is about, sort of about the same topic.
Yes, and more recently I wrote another article for Alternative Right where I was also, again, taking issue with the pickup artists and their whole shtick. And at the end of that article, I was writing about the breakup of Kristen Stewart, when Kristen Stewart cheated on Robert Pattinson, you know, and it made the tabloids a few months ago. And, you know, another example of, you know, a woman being seduced away by a more alpha type was how it was being spun. And so I sort of riffed on that, and at the end of this that article, I made a reference to a book, an upcoming book that was going to be written on this subject. So, it did come out of that my little scraps, I guess you could say, with the PUA and all of their ideology and so forth. Which I should emphasize that I'm not totally against the PUA, the pickup artist, what should we say, community, in every way. I just find, I'm certainly with them on certain subjects, but I do find their whole, recommendation that you got to be alpha all the time and you got to be on the prowl and behaving like an asshole in order to get women to want to sleep with you, more or less. I mean, I do find that kind of annoying. So this is in some ways, yes, very much on that same subject, that same topic. But of course, it starts there and it goes off in many, many different directions from that point, I should say. It's not just about pickup artistry, satire of the pickup artist ideology.
So you compare it to a cross between Back to the Future, Revenge of the Nerds, and I think one other movie.
Yes, that's in the sales pitch that I give. It's also on YouTube. Yes, Back to the Future, and what was the other one that you mentioned?
Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, Back to the Future, Revenge of the Nerds, and Silence of the Lambs. It's sort of a mashup. It's a combination of those three stories, which are not, I know those aren't the three stories, necessarily mixing and meshing well together, but hopefully that's intriguing for some.
I thought you said it was less violent than the Columbine Pilgrim.
Oh, yes. It is less violent. There's not a whole lot of violence in this book. There's a male protagonist and a female protagonist who eventually meet up with one another, and when they meet, the series of interviews that take place between the two of them is somewhat reminiscent of Clarence Starling speaking with Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs. It has that same kind of vibe to it, that same kind of feeling. So also there are, like I said, this is a crime thriller, and there are numerous seeming examples of suicides, but possibly murders that are taking place at a particular high school of beautiful young women who all die identically. They lose their virginity and then shoot themselves in the heart, and hence the name Heart Killer. And so the female protagonist of my story is an FBI agent who's a criminal profiler who visits this community where this is happening and tries to figure out what's going on, why all these beautiful, popular girls at this high school are dying in this manner. And eventually she runs into the male protagonist of the story, Johann Salvadoris, who is the heart killer of the title. And I won't say right now how exactly he fits in with these deaths that are occurring and, the crime thriller aspect of the story. But just suffice it to say that there is a sort of battle of wits, or battle of wills, that takes place between these two characters that, to me, is kind of reminiscent and maybe in some ways influenced by that tête-à-tête in Silence of the Lambs.
So you're saying the main character, he is the protagonist?
Yes. Yes, he is. Johann Salvadoris is his name.
And you get into sort of the transformation of himself from how he was originally to what he became.
Yes. How he transforms, what causes him to transform, it's written in the first person, which can be disconcerting to some.
Just like the Columbine Pilgrim.
Yes, just like the first section of the Columbine Pilgrim. The Columbine Pilgrim is divided into two sections, and the first part of it is written in first person from the point of view of this possibly sociopathic madman, delusional madman. The second part of it's in third person, written by somebody else, so from the point of view of somebody else. But this particular book is all, or not all, mostly in first person, either from the point of view of the male protagonist, Johann Salvadoris, or from the female protagonist, who is named Frances, and who is this FBI agent profiler, who has issues of her own, and then they eventually these two lives intertwine in some very strange and I will definitely say atypical ways. It's not just your typical formulaic story. It's a rather unusual story, and goes into some places that you wouldn't necessarily expect it to go.
And he does, it is, as you said, Back to the Future, it is a time travel story.
Yes, there is a component of time travel. And so, there's, for those of I Love the 80s types, nostalgia hounds, I guess, there's something in it for you. If you've ever wondered what it would be like, what it might be like to go back into your, into the body of your high school self, with the consciousness and the experience of, you know, a 40-year-old, then if you've ever wondered about that and, you know, thought about what you might do under those circumstances, then this book might also be interesting for you. So there is a time travel element. I won't give away too much about that, but there's also an alternative history element. Alternate history is a genre of science fiction that's interested me for a long time, in which, you know, there's a different timeline in which history fell out proceeded in a different way than the history that we know. So, for example, what would history be like if Germany and Japan won World War II? What would history be like if the South won the Civil War? In my case, in the story in Heart Killer, the protagonist travels back in time and does some things that end up, you know, that cause a ripple in the time space continuum and end up changing history around.
So not just his personal life, the world and society as a whole.
That's right. Not just his personal life. It begins on a personal level and a seemingly insignificant level, but again, it's spread. His actions have consequences and end up altering history, not necessarily changing history, but creating a different timeline, a parallel history to the one that we know. All because, again, you know, like the, you know, some of your listeners might know about the Ray Bradbury story where the characters go back in time to the prehistoric era and someone steps on a butterfly, kills a butterfly, and that changes everything. You know, you change one little thing around and then other things fall like dominoes. And then some, before you know it, so there's some big changes that have happened. So, yeah, it's also about that. Like I said, this is a very... it's an expansive novel. There's a certain element of erotica to it. There's an element of a crime thriller to it. And it's also got this science fiction alternate history element to it. So it's definitely a genre morphing, genre bending novel.
The erotic part of it, how graphic is that part?
I wouldn't say it's NC-17 territory, but definitely R. I don't know what to. I don't know as far as how graphic is it. I'm not sure.
Can you give a specific example?
Well, I don't know. There's nothing that's too detailed. But there's some steamy scenes. Some scenes in which you know there's some, what shall we say, kinky kinds of circumstances that are kind of disturbing on one level, but maybe also turn on on another level. You know, it's that kind of sexuality that's a little bit out there and a little bit unusual. Not in the sense of anything like perverted, but just in the sense of, you know, there's some, I guess, some domination themed stuff. There's some, there's a little bit of cruelty in the sex, because again, this is without giving too much away, this is about a character who, again, in the words of Pat Benatar, is using sex as a weapon to obtain revenge.
When he does these sex acts, is he in his middle-aged body or his young body?
Well, he begins in his middle-aged body and then goes back into his young body. And then at first he's resolved because he feels he's corrupted himself, and you know, he wants another chance to redeem himself. I should say that also. This is a character who is, you know, definitely not an admirable person in a lot of ways, but also someone who aches for redemption. I would say redemption is also a theme in the story. So originally he goes back and wants to live a more pure life, wants a second chance, but then the temptation to get revenge against the people who tormented him and treated him badly in his teenage years, it gets to be too strong, and once again leads him to do things that are, like I said, a little bit unadmirable.
These are the same girls who rejected him earlier.
Yes, there's one in particular who he gets in his sight, and again, without giving too much away, decides to, he's going to get some kind of terrible revenge against for the way she haughtily rejected him and again laughed at him and treated him like he was a loser and so forth. All the things that, all those wonderful things that are a part of the history of, I mean, are part of being a teenager for a lot of us.
The thing is, you don't want to give away too much of the book.
Right. No, I don't want to give away too much. I mean, I want people to buy it and read it for themselves, and you can get it, again, from ER Books, erbooks.com, or on Amazon. Just type in the title Heart Killer. But I do think, again, it's a book that should have appeal to a lot of different people on a lot of different levels. And I think that, you know, people who are in our ghetto, the people that I was talking about at the beginning of our interview, you know, the alternative right type people, there's a certain definite, as is the case in most of my work, there is a definite critique of modernity, the evils of modernity, the perverseness of the zeitgeist. That's very much there. It's permeated in the work.
One thing I'll say about your work is that it's not, it's definitely very edgy. I think a lot of, the thing about a lot of traditionalists and writers is they have a tendency to want to make all their books wholesome. But the mm-hmm. thing is, I think to critique the current society, you sort of have to write about degenerate things.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a subject I've written essays about before at Alternative Right and other places. Sex and Violence Traditionalism is the name of one that I wrote. As Flannery O'Connor said, to the hard of hearing you shout, and for the almost blind you draw large and startling pictures. You know, you have to reach people, you have to shake them up a little bit. And sometimes that means depicting things that are maybe not wholesome, that are disturbing. But that's just what you have to do from time to time. You know, just because a book depicts immorality, that doesn't make it an immoral book. You know, it's amazing to me just how dense some people are about that, to me, easily understood fact. But anyway, I mean, if you're into wholesome G-rated stuff, then you should probably not read Heart Killer. But if you want a provocative read, again, that's on one level a critique of modernity and all the kind of things that you would expect from me and from another writer, you know, who writes in my vein, who's critiquing the zeitgeist, and so forth. And also, hopefully an entertaining read, a provocative read that has, you know, that's a feast for the mind, as well as for the loins, one might say. You know, again, also people who are interested in paradoxes and time travel and alternate histories, all those nerdy kind of things that I'm into, will like it. But also, I think people who are interested in crime thrillers, catching criminals and the whole dynamic of, you know, the staying on the right side of the law versus, I don't know, being attracted to danger. I think people who are into those kinds of things will also find things to appreciate about Hartgeller. So I really think there is a broad appeal, something that will speak to a lot of people. And again, it's my hope that it'll, you know, help expand the ideas of the alternate right, maybe a little bit into the mainstream.
So you wrote a review on alternative right of Mark Ames' book called Going Postal, and you titled it Lefty Nails at Mark Ames on a White Malaise. I know, but one thing's interesting is I noticed on his site, it's from the site The Exile, and it's a site of I think it's of American expats out of Russia, but he has an article from 2009 about the book. And it's actually ties in. You don't really talk about it as much in your alternative right article, but this article ties into what you're talking about. It's called Revenge of the Nerd, and it's about the gym massacre in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that seems to be a subject that Ames is very interested in, analyzing these massacres, and, you know, like Columbine and also a lot of office shootings. And that's what I was discussing in the article. He's interested in seeing these shootings as expression of the people who are put upon in society, the people who are mocked and spat on and treated badly. This is their, you know, since they've been denied any other outlet, any other way to express their anger and frustration at how they've been treated, then this is what they immediately go to, is these terrible orgies of violence. And yeah, I thought that in my article I was just talking about how, you know, he's not afraid to talk about white malaise, and specifically, you know, to stand up for the white middle class, which is not something you typically find in the among left-wing writers, where there's, you know, a definite tendency to have an anti-white perspective, even if in many cases the writer himself is white. That was something I found interesting in the book. There are a lot of interesting things in that particular book, Going Postal by Mark Ames.
Well, his article about the shooting in Pittsburgh is that the shooter, he was motivated by similar reasons as the character protagonist in your recent book, but then he also ties it in with economic issues. But that's sort of the thing is, a lot of, you seem to have a sympathy for sort of the underdog. A lot of people on the right, they say that because they're anti-egalitarian, they try to, they sort of dismiss that being for the underdog as being kind of a lefty.
Yeah, that may be true. And I'm certainly not an egalitarian. I don't think we are all equal in the sense of, you know, equally intelligent or equally valuable as far as our behavior. I mean, I guess I do believe that there is a certain equality that we all share in the sense of being human, which is probably not something that other readers and writers of Countercurrents would differ from me about. But then again, I am a Catholic Christian, so I do think there are certain commonalities that we have as, you know, for being human. But obviously, there are differences between people, between races, and so forth. I think you say I'm motivated by a desire to stand up for the underdog. I think that's true. You know, I think there's something about despised ideologies, people who are just treated like dirt and kicked around, because they use the wrong word or express the wrong quote unquote ideas about one thing or another. They are very much the underdog.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read your new book, but I know with Tony Meander's character, Tony Meander in the Columbine Pilgrim, is a very sort of a high intelligent person. I think part of it, what it goes to, isn't so much egalitarianism is false, but I think the thing about society, and I think high school and college and specifically, it's very unegalitarian, but it's sort of based on a very superficial values. You gave an example of a story when you were in college and you were kind of made fun of for, I think it was for reading Kierkegaard. You were talking to a girl you liked in college, and she asked you why you were reading Kierkegaard. And you said you were reading it just reading it for the sake of reading it. And she was kind of like, oh, okay.
Being smart, being well-read is somehow seen as, ew, what's wrong with you? In some circles, that's kind of what, that's what I was referring to there. And how, you know, the whole idea that I would be reading something like Kierkegaard or something else, you know, along those lines, something else that's weighty, and that would be seen as, you know, that, oh man, you just need to lighten up, you need to chill out, you know, that would be the response of others always kind of galls me a little. So high school is definitely not egalitarian, you're right, and cliques, one clique is not as good as another clique, but there are good reasons and bad reasons for hierarchies, and I would say treating people who are well-read as if they were freaks, that's not the symptom of a well-thought-out system of hierarchies.
Back to this article on alternative right, you say he kind of hints at white advocacy, but why? I want to ask you, why is it sort of necessary to call him a lefty if he's speaking the truth? Is it because he identifies with the left? If he's speaking the truth, I mean, he shouldn't necessarily, if he's saying something that's spot on, I don't think it's a good idea to necessarily put him in a box unless he goes out of his way to call himself a lefty.
Oh, yeah, he does. He is very much, he's a proud, self-proclaimed left-winger.
There's a lot of people on the left who actually have a lot of good ideas, but they have this kind of a knee-jerk reactionary or a knee-jerk reaction to the right because they kind of associate the right with a lot of horrible things like big corporations and the police state. So he's someone like that. He's not like a politically correct cultural Marxist type. Because I think it's good to put everyone on the left or the right in like a box.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, I was just saying, in the case of the article, he was somebody who, I wasn't saying lefty in a pejorative sense. I was just saying he's someone on the left, who claims to be, on the left, and wouldn't refuse to embrace that designation of being on the left. But at the same time, as you say, he's not a
cultural Marxist or politically correct person.
No, he's definitely not politically correct. It's part of what makes him interesting.
Because the thing is, like, the kind of a mainstream politically correct liberals, they sort of have this, I don't know, they have this kind of despise for, like, angry white males. Like, that's, like, the worst thing you can be. But that kind of goes back, his book, Going Postal, he kind of has sympathy for these kind of working class, middle class white males who have been kind of marginalized.
Yes, he does, and he is in favor of angry white males. He's in sympathy with angry white males, which I think again makes him interesting and unique in some ways. Now there are other things about the book that I think are a little tedious. He seems to think that Ronald Reagan is responsible for every single corporate shooting or office massacre that's taken place since 1981. So, I mean, which seems to be stretching things a little. But But generally speaking, as you say, yeah, he's got a perspective that's I think a little bit unusual for a lefty, and so that's what I was wanting to give him credit for in that article.
So, what can you give some examples of things he says about whites, specifically in his book Going Postal?
I don't have any specifics in mind right now, except what I mentioned in the article, which is just that he says, and I don't even have those words in front of me right now. Do you have that article up on your page?
Yeah, I have it.
Quoted from in there.
I'll read it out loud for the audience. Today's white middle class must be the only socioeconomic group in mankind's history that not only doesn't recognize its own miseries as valid, but reacts dismissively, sarcastically, even violently against anyone from their class who tries to validate their misery. It is more comforting for the white middle class to believe that they aren't really suffering, to allocate all official pathos to the misery of other socioeconomic groups. It's more comforting to accuse those who disagree of being psychotically weak whiners. Despite its several hundred million strong demographics, the white bourgeoisie's pain doesn't officially count. It is too ashamed of itself to sympathize with its own suffering. Yeah, I mean, that is excellent, but that's not something you expect to hear from, like, a lefty.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's why I quoted it. I found that particular summary of, you know, what's been called elsewhere of white ethnomasochism, you know, where you have to just beat yourself up for being white, and just if you have a problem with anything, then oh well, you can't complain because you're white. You've got everything you've ever wanted, you know, and it gets a little old and a little frustrating. And so it's good to see someone like Ames, again, I'm not endorsing everything he says, but I do think that that's a way in which he's dead on.
Before I wrap the show up, is there anything else you'd like to add, either about this topic or your book?
Well, let me give the particulars on the book again. You can find it if you're interested. You can find it at erbooks.com. Again, the title is Heart Killer. You can find it on Amazon. And if you want to read an excerpt from the book, then go to Alternative Right. You'll find two excerpts. One is under the title Heart Killer, an excerpt, simply. And the latest one is called Seduce and Destroy. And it's got a picture of Tom Cruise from the movie Magnolia. So go there if you want to read a couple of excerpts. I hopefully have some, there are some reviews in the works right now. I'm doing what I can to publicize it. But again, if you like erotic tension and release, if you like science fiction, you know, weird paradoxes, time travel, alternate universes, if you like a crime thriller, battle of wits between a criminal and an investigator, and if you're somebody who enjoyed The Columbine Pilgrim and Under the Nile and other things that I've written, and you can relate to this whole theme of revenge plays out in the story, I don't think you'll be disappointed. It's a very interesting take on revenge of the nerd, in a very interesting and unusual way. So again, find it on the site of the company ER Books, or find it on Amazon and get a purchase for your Kindle or for your iPad or whatever. Again, it's available exclusively right now as an ebook, but hopefully sometime soon it'll come out. If we can just come up with some really overwhelming, you know, if it can be another Fifty Shades of Grey, if it can be the Alternative Rights version of Fifty Shades of Grey, then maybe, you know, it'll eventually be showing up in I don't know, grocery store somewhere as a paperback. Who knows?
If you get it published as a paperback, would it probably be on? Would it be probably with Countercurrents?
I don't know. Well, that kind of remains to be seen. We'll see how it plays out, and I'll keep you informed.
Andy Nowicki, I'd like to thank you again for being on.
Well, thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.